This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Speech competitions are a great way to step up your game. We know that each year, an estimated 30,000 Toastmasters from around the world compete with 8 finalists vying for the title of the World Champion of Public Speaking, which happens each year at the International Convention in August. Now, if you're thinking of entering the contest, or you're still on the fence, or just a little curious, the best time to start is right now. Our guest today has quite a treasure trove of speech-winning secrets. He has an incredible speaking career, vast experience, and a wealth of knowledge. He is Dilip Abhisekara, Distinguished Toastmaster, accredited speaker, and past international president. Dilip has been a member of Toastmasters for more than a third of its 100 years of existence, joining back in 1986 in St. Louis, Missouri, where he worked as an industrial chemist. He became hooked after his first visit and has maintained continuous membership, finding a new club each time he moved for work. Dilip can sincerely say that Toastmasters changed his life. These self-discoveries he made led him to change careers multiple times, from chemist to trainer and keynote speaker to college professor and administrator, and finally to pastor. As international president in 2005-2006, his theme was Find Your Voice, Serve Your World. Dilip excelled in both Toastmasters communication and leadership tracks, but soon after joining, Dilip was drawn to speech contests, competing in table topics, international speech, and evaluation contest. He won district titles in each of these, but the international speech contest became his focus, earning him 5 district titles, 2 appearances at the World Championship of Public Speaking Finals, and a respectable second place finish in 1992. In 1989, he also tested his mettle at the International Platform Association's Speaking Letter Competition, placing a respectable second. All this competition polished his speaking skills, which stood him in good stead as a leader all the way to being elected as international president. Last year, Dilip retired from the ministry. He and his wife moved to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where he continues to enjoy having the time to mentor Toastmasters in the USA and around the world. Dilip's article, Speech Contest Winning Secrets, Get Ready to Become the Best Contestant You can be found online and in the November 2024 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Dilip Abhisekara, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to connecting with people on this podcast, in addition to the article that you just cited.
Now, Dilip, I'm not sure if you were a scared, stiff type like me when you began, or already an orator in the making. I have to ask, what was it that first drew you to speech competitions in the first place?
Oh, I'll tell you. Because I love to speak. I was in my high school debating team, and when I went to college, I competed in the first, they called it an oratorical contest at Palm Beach Junior College. I entered that contest, and I had been in the States only for about 8 months by that time. And here I was competing, and I loved the competition. I placed second in that contest, and I knew that I could speak. So when I heard that there's this organization called Toastmasters where you get to give speeches, I thought, wow, this is awesome. There's an audience to listen to what I have to say. Later, I found that not everyone has the same mindset about that. And so I wanted to test my mettle. That's basically what I wanted to do. See how good I am and how good I can be.
Oh, that's funny. Let's perhaps maybe start from the beginning. If someone is just thinking about taking the leap, you know, maybe they have an idea for a topic, where's the first place that they should start?
I think the first place they should start is just listening to championship speeches. Thanks to YouTube, now many of the world champions have their speeches on YouTube. I recommend that they go and listen to those speeches. And as they listen, notice how the speeches are crafted. Crafting a speech is a specialized skill that one has to learn if you're going to win at very high levels. And so you learn how to determine what the central idea of your speech is, how to build your speech with an attention-grabbing introduction, lead into the topic, and then create a way that people will understand that there is something in that speech for them. So I tell people I coach, by the time you finish your introduction, people should be thinking, I better listen to this. There's something in this for me. I'd say the first thing the speaker should do is ask, how can I make this relevant to my audience? The speaker has to understand that they're speaking not to win a trophy. They're speaking to connect with an audience and give them value. If the value is high enough and the judges think so, the chances are pretty good that they will win that speech contest. Even if they don't win, for example, my 1990 speech, I think that was the best speech I had given up to that point and it not place. But because I knew that I had really given value and done a good job, I wasn't upset. I thought, wow, that's the best speech I have ever given. So maybe I just stay on this track and learn how to get even better. So that's what I would suggest. Learn how to craft a speech by listening to championship speeches and applying the lessons you learn in how to begin your speech, the opening, grabbing attention. I have written an article called The Art of the Speech, the Art of the Opening, A-R-T. A stands for attention, R stands for relevance, and T stands for topic. By the time you finish the introduction, those three things should have been covered. Then you go into the body, you learn how to tell a story to illustrate your point, make sure the points are all interconnected so that there's a flow in your speech, and then you end if you want to inspire, end by inspiring the audience. If you want to persuade, ask for action. If you are just giving information, give a summary so that people can remember what you said. Whatever it is that you wanted to achieve in that speech, wrap it up powerfully at the end, and then people will remember it. Introduction, body, conclusion. So it's really a way of learning, and the way you learn in Toastmasters, as you know, Greg, is by doing. And that means you have to prepare yourself to lose. It's okay to lose because you're bound to learn something every time you compete, and that will add up and ultimately allow you to speak to bigger audiences and win the bigger awards.
That's awesome. Now, you talked about in the article, you talked about choosing an engaging topic. Of course, when we were just speaking here, you're also talking about the audience and you're talking about value. Can you share a little bit about the concept of the Venn diagram as you referred to it in the article?
Yes. Boy, Greg, my hat is off to you. You obviously do your homework. You read my article. Yes, the Venn diagram I mentioned in my November article was part of it is you. It has to have meaning for you. Otherwise, you cannot speak enthusiastically. You cannot speak authentically. You cannot speak with power. So it has to have deep meaning for you. Then the other is the audience. Is this of interest to the audience? Will it have relevance to their lives? Don't talk about something that is only relevant to you and not to the audience. It has to connect with the audience. And then the third part of the Venn diagram is value. What is the value you're giving? It has to be something of value for people to want to listen to you. Yes, it can have relevance, but if the value is small, if they wonder, well, why you're spending time on that, no, it must be of value. So you, the audience, and value. And when these three come together, that small place where they intersect, that's your topic.
Interesting.
Yes. So
one of the things you also mentioned in the article is understanding the judge's guide and what you're describing in terms of yourself and the audience and of value is seen directly there. Can you share a little bit about how those work together?
Probably the best way to do it is to give an example. And the example I talk about is my World Championship speech in 1992. I had to ask myself the you part. What is unique about what I'm going to share? I don't want to just give a speech that anybody can give. I want to give a speech where the audience knows that I'm drawing upon my life experience. So I chose to talk about the time that I came over from Sri Lanka to the United States as a student. I was 19 years old. I enrolled in a college in Florida. So I began to talk about that experience. I was a stranger in a strange land. I used that line in the speech. And then I talked about how is it that this strange land became my homeland. So I thought about all the different human interactions I had had that had enabled me to adopt America as my adopted country. And so all these images came to my mind, and I thought, well, you know, I'm really talking about what makes our human experience fruitful and enjoyable and meaningful. Oh, I'm talking about human relationships. So slowly it becomes clearer to me. Will this resonate with people? And I was thinking, yes, because all of us are connected. And when we are disconnected, that is when people are depressed and lose hope. We need people. People need people. And they must learn how to nurture these human relationships. I'm just sharing with you my thought process. So what are those points in my life where human relationships made a difference? And so I talked about some dear friends who I met in Florida, and then later when they moved to Georgia, they still kept in touch with me, and how one Christmas I was a lonely graduate student in a drafty room with no ability to buy a plane ticket to go home to visit my family. And I came from a large family. I knew what Christmas was to us. Song and laughter and great food and relatives and friends coming and exchanging gifts, all the joy of Christmas. And I got a message from my friends in Georgia saying the husband had got an unexpected Christmas bonus check. They'd like to send me a bus ticket to come spend Christmas with them. And I shared the sheer joy I felt, how that gesture helped connect me to this country that I chose to adopt as my own. I also felt I need to share with them the pain that we suffer in this life. So I talked about the time I lost my job. What a terrible experience it was for me. And I felt disconnected, lost my job, lost my sense of self because I had always identified myself as a scientist, and now my job was taken from me. I talked about the time I was at home just nursing my broken heart in my study, and my 4-year-old daughter came in. She saw me, her eyes lit up, and she ran up to me, jumped up on my lap, hugged me tightly, and whispered in my ear, "I love you, Daddy." And then I pause and share again authentically, because I'm speaking from my heart about something that really happened. I said I felt as if a soothing balm had been gently laid on my wounded heart. I was her daddy. She loved me. That was enough.
So you took that personal experience and you found a universal message which had incredible value to anybody who listened to it, because they could interpret it in many different ways.
Exactly right, Greg. Yeah, in fact, when I was writing that speech, I had sent a draft to Ted Wood, my mentor. And Ted wrote back and said he liked it, but he said, add another sentence. When you talk about you being laid off, stop and look at the audience and say, perhaps some of you can relate to my pain. And I bet there were many in that audience who had been laid off. That was in 1989. Had been laid off, who knew the pain, and they would think, oh yeah, I know what you went through. I've been through the same. Or I know someone who has gone through that. Yes, it's really relating to the audience, making my story become their message. It's never just about the speaker. It's always how the speaker can connect to the lived experience of the audience.
Excellent. You also talked about some rhetorical devices, little pauses.
Right.
The delivery of the speech. So those are also a number of things that obviously when you're studying others, it's not just the words they say, but how they say it, how they're delivering it, the stories that they're telling.
You got it right. That's why nowadays, you know, we have videos to watch. So you can not only hear the speech, but you can see how the speaker uses body language, uses their body movement, uses their posture to convey a message and a meaning in what they're saying and connect with that audience. We are living in a golden age when we have all this technology to help us study what others are doing so well and then ask, how can I adopt that for my speech?
I guess you didn't have that back in 1992.
No, but I listened to those audio tapes over and over and over again. The first time I competed was in 1987 when we didn't have the video. But by the time I competed in 1992, I had observed, I had gone to world championships, watched those speakers, got their videotapes, studied them, and then it became part of who I was as I spoke. And video feedback was another powerful tool I used. I remember one day I was trying out a contest speech at a club. One of the pieces of feedback I got was someone just kind of joking with me, saying, you had so many gestures. I didn't catch that. Fortunately, I had got that video recorded. And I realized that, boy, I was moving my hands unnecessarily, moving my hands too many times. It was sometimes interfering with the message. And that caused me to really slow down my gestures, move only when it added to the speech or when I felt compelled so that it was a natural movement. So all this helped.
So, of course, these are all the things that you learned in the Toastmaster program. I'm just curious with the speech. Obviously, it took a while to develop. Did the storyline change over time? The final speech that you came up with, was it the same or similar to when you first started?
Yeah, the central idea was the same, but how I expressed it, there were many, many nuances. I think I had 18 revisions to that. 18 times there was some change I made. And I kept testing the changes on different audiences. So I not only exhausted my club members giving the same speech for more feedback, but visiting local clubs. And then I felt I needed to go outside my district to another district and get their feedback on this. These are people who don't normally listen to me because I'm not in their district. But I would ask for permission to come and present a contest speech to get their feedback to help me make it better. And so all this feedback then gave me the challenge of sifting through all this feedback to find those gems of insight that I felt could make this even better. So we learned to not only receive feedback with gratitude, but then become very discerning in what will make this clearer, simpler, and easier to follow for the audience.
And you rehearsed not 100 times, not 200 times, but according to the article, 360 times.
Right. Yeah, I became a very, very disciplined. I kept a record of every time I spoke. I kept all the feedback, written feedback that I asked for. I actually created a feedback form that people who listened to my contest speech could fill out. That way, I would have their written thoughts about how I could improve, what connected, what they loved, and what they didn't think added to the speech. To this day, I have a thick binder. I think it's a 2-inch binder with all the feedback forms I collected. I would pore over these and ask what advice will help this become a better speech.
And of course, you need to be selective because some people are offering their opinion. Sometimes you can take it and sometimes you can say, I prefer not.
Exactly. But I wouldn't tell them that. I would say, hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. But then I would have to make the decision what advice I would follow and what advice I would not.
One question that always comes to mind, given that You have to speak more than 4 minutes and 30 seconds and less than 7 minutes and 30 seconds. Otherwise, you'll be disqualified. Right. Is memorization.
Right.
What's your take on memorizing your speech?
That's a common question that's asked by people who are beginning their speech contest journeys. I tell them, you have 7 minutes and 30 seconds max. So every word must count. You don't have the luxury of using unnecessary words. And how you do that is by first fine-tuning your speech so that you say, okay, this is about as good as I can make it right now. Then you want to give that speech to an audience and get their feedback. Find out what you can drop, whether there's anything you need to add, and hone your speech. And then at some point, you stop playing with it and you start memorizing. And I would just memorize a paragraph at a time. I would not try to memorize the whole speech right away, but I would give it at home. I would have a tape recorder going. Then I would take that and look at the script that I had written and ask myself, where did I deviate? Once in a while, I would come up with a better expression than what I had written down. So I would change the script. But that script ultimately becomes a place that you stop changing anymore and say, this is about the best I can do. And I'm running out of time. I'm getting close to the contest. So this is what I'm going to go with. My family also became a key player in this. My wife, being a native-born American, could correct any mistakes I made in grammar. My children, because they had to listen to their dad, they became important. My son would be the timer. My daughter would listen critically. She was a little older, and she has a knack for language. And then they would tell me what they thought. Here's an example. So one day I was driving my car with my daughter. She was 6 years old at the time. She was in her car seat in the back of the car. And I said, okay, Allison, listen to what I'm saying now. This is the speech I'm planning to give at the contest. While I was driving, I launched into the speech. Then she said, Daddy, Daddy. She was interrupting my speech. She said, you're talking as if you don't mean it. Oh my gosh, out of the mouths of babes. Yes, thank you, Allison, I said. I had to remember that I'm not just giving a speech by rote. I have to be able to say it in such a way as if it comes out as if I'm really meaning it, that I believe in what I'm saying. These are all the little things that went into making me a better speaker. Seeking feedback from people that you might not expect. Another time I remember I was practicing for a regional level contest. I had won the district. Now I needed to win at the regional. And when I gave the speech, I thought I had given it perfectly the way I had memorized it. Then one gentleman who had never won a speech contest, who was sitting in the front row of the audience, said, Dilip, I think you skipped over the finishing line for your speech. I got it. I got the message and you kept talking. And that disrupted my focus. I said, what was the line that I said that you felt was the perfect ending? He told me what it was. Yes, I had given about 3 or 4 sentences more after that. I thought about it. I thought, you know what? He might be right. So I tried that speech again, ending where he had said I should end. Every time I tried that with a different audience, the feedback came, that was a perfect ending. And that's what I used and won at the regional level. So it's like being open. There are people who can give you feedback that you might not expect, but listen to them. They are the audience. They are the ones you're trying to touch in the heart and in the mind. And when they say something, think about it seriously. So this is all part of that process of learning to speak, give value to an audience, and make sure that you are saying something they can take back with them and apply to their lives.
Wow. As you're speaking, I've jotted down about 10 or 15 different things here. Dilip, we have just scratched the surface. Folks, if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, well, first of all, I want to encourage you all to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Google, Apple, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And also, don't forget, you can read Dilip's article, Speech Contest Winning Secrets, Get Ready to Become the Best Contestant You Can Be, in the November 2024 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. And there you'll find a deep dive into a lot more about what we talked about. Now, Dilip, this has been fantastic. I wish we had more time to get deeper into some of these other areas. Perhaps just to end us off, perhaps someone might have their eyes on becoming the next world champion, or perhaps they just want to get their feet wet. What advice would you give them to get them started?
I would recommend that they plan to enter the speech contest that Toastmasters offer. If they have completed the requirements that make them eligible to compete in the international speech contest, plan to compete. If they don't have those requirements met yet because they are a new member, I would suggest that they enter the table topics contest, the evaluation contest. Enter a contest that will stretch you and challenge you, but above all, be ready to learn. You are only competing against yourself. When you take that attitude, then you're always hungry to learn and grow and improve. So enter the contest. It's a unique gift that you get in the Toastmasters program. Compete, learn, and grow and become.
That's sage advice. And some districts actually have tall tales contests, humorous speech contests.
That's right.
Yeah, there's all different types of contests out there.
Exactly. Yes, they're all part of the educational experience that Toastmasters offers. And especially if someone thinks that they might like to go into leadership sometime, enter the speech contest, hone your skills, and you'll be a better leader for it.
That's wonderful. Now, Dilip, if someone wanted to reach out and find out more about what you do or ask you any questions about speech competitions, where's the best way for them to reach out?
Probably the best way is to send me an email, D for Dilip, Abhesekara. So they'll have to make sure they spell my last name correctly. D-A-B-A-Y-A-S-E-K-A-R-A. D Abhesekara at susumc.org.
And we'll make sure that we include that in the show notes so everyone can just simply copy and paste. Distinguished Toastmaster, accredited speaker, past international president, Dilip Abhesekara, thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom today.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on your podcast, you being a great listener and asking those searching questions that I hope will enable someone else to gain value from this podcast.
Thank you.
Ever imagined a book written just for you? Introducing Pooks.ai. We're not just another bookstore. We're the future of reading. Our state-of-the-art AI adapts each book to your specific needs, creating a personalized masterpiece. Visit Pooks.ai now. That's P-O-O-K-S.ai. And use the promotion code SPOTIFY for a whopping 50% off. Pooks.ai. Your personalized book awaits.